This podcast is from heptagonclub.co.uk and paulcarenza.com. The Heptagon Club.
Heptagon Club.
Heptagon Club with Paul Carenza. 7 guests, 7 corners.
On this week's show,
the minute I'm at plurals and words like in, which is in.
Oh, I just do films now.
I did play a tree.
Reputation equals productivity times spotlight.
And your host,
Mr. Paul Carenza.
Hello and welcome. Is it too late to say Happy New Year? Yes, it definitely is. Well, Happy New Week if you're listening near the start of the week. If you're not, then I hope your week has been well. You know, I've started doing a bit of local radio, sitting in for the Sunday breakfast show on BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey last couple of weeks, and I've loved it, although the 3:30 a.m. start can sort itself out. But no, the first thing they teach you on that is you speak to the listener as a you singular, you know, as an individual. So I hope that you, just you, sitting there / standing there / lying there, you are well anyway. So you, just you, I'm watching you. So I've gone too far. I'll keep it general. Anyway, thank you for joining us. This is the first podcast of 2018. Following a couple of Crimbo specials we've had, I went a little bit Christmas crazy, but I love Christmas. What can I say? I'm still writing a Christmas play as we speak to debut this July at Guildford Fringe Festival. Confirmed the dates today. Yes, a Christmas play in July. That's right. But you can get tickets now, I believe, if you Google Guildford Fringe Festival. Come and see the premiere in July of Three Wise Men by me, unfortunately. But this, anyway, is the first podcast of the year. It's also going to be the last for a bit. We're going on hiatus. It's the end of season 2 of the Heptagon Club. I need a few months to go away and stockpile some more great guests. Got a few in the bank, but we need more. So if you would like to be a guest, or if you know someone who should be, drop me a line, paul@paulcarenza.com. We've got lots of comedians, especially this week, but also some muggles too. So on this podcast, our rule is 7 guests a week, and we want their expertise, their advice, their wisdom, their knowledge, their anecdotes, and everyone's got those. So whether comedian or not, you can get in touch, get on the podcast for season 3, which shall hopefully return later in the year, probably summer-ish, but we'll see. So this week, that guest expertise, or guestpertise, we could call it, includes some comedy circuit reminiscence, baseball, how not to play a tree, and basic Italian. So first, we had this fine guest on 2 episodes ago, on the first of our Christmas specials, Justin Edwards, actor, funny man, soon in The Ferryman, in fact, the Jez Butterworth play in London's glittering West End, I believe. And most recently, Justin has been seen in a variety of cinematic top tenors, including the Dickens film The Man Who Invented Christmas, and much more. We can also still see you in cinemas at the minute in The Death of Star.
Death of Star and Paddington 2.
And Paddington 2. Actually, I'm not in the scene.
I'm briefly in Paddington 2 as a policeman again, which I've revived my... Excellent. My role in that for the benefit of my own children, because they get a lot of playground kudos from my dad.
Excellent.
Strangely, you know, the kids in the playground haven't seen The Death of Stalin, so I don't know.
No, exactly.
They don't mention that.
Well, more shockingly, as this is embarrassing, I didn't even know about the Paddington thing because I was saving it to watch with my children. So everyone else I know has seen and loved Paddington.
That's lovely.
And it sounds so amazing that I think I'm going to wait for that magical moment when the snow is falling and I can...
It's a really good one, yeah.
You seem to me, you've made the big screen, the jump.
Yes, sort of. Although I feel like I haven't been busy at all this year, because I haven't. Sort of wrangling small children and doing odd voiceovers for things. But those 3 films I did about this time last year, they suddenly all come out at the same time. So if I go, oh, well, they're always in the cinema, I go, yeah, I wasn't doing much for 9 months this year. It's just how it happens.
It feels like you were filming all on the same day, but of course it wasn't quite that.
Yes, but I haven't actually done much television this year, which is sort of, it's quite nice. Well, it's not nice for my bank balance, but it's quite nice to, the idea that, I just do films now, sounds really great.
That's nice.
Basically, they haven't been offered anything else.
Right.
That's
what they think you've jumped ship now.
They think, oh, this is too good for us, which is not true at all.
Yes, we'll have you back.
But, you know, radio still, I seem to be too much on Radio 4, but that's...
Excellent. Yes, well, in fact, when I first encountered you, I think it was probably you doing the Radio 4 things, consultants, things like that.
Yeah, and loads of stuff over the years, and a few more dramas and things now, and I did another series with Mira Sal, but so it's been a nice...
Speaking of ambitions for the year, let's ask funny man Joe Lycett, who is, well, you've seen him on countless telly things, I know, 8 out of 10 Cats does Countdown, that's one of my personal favourites. On that, he recounted how he wrote a letter protesting a parking fine in hilarious fashion. His book includes other ranty letters to corporations, and it's called Parsnips Buttered. We will add that book to our Amazon guests list, where we curate books by guests to this podcast. So apart from letter writing and being hilarious, what else is Joe Lycett up to?
Trying to learn Italian at the minute.
Oh, nice.
Thought I'd do that this year. I'm now, according to Duolingo, the app that I'm using, I'm now 24% fluent.
Oh, it's nice you can quantify that, isn't it?
Yeah. Which means not fluent, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah, I suppose. Yes.
I'm sort of, at the minute, I'm at plurals and words like in.
Right.
And that kind of thing.
Yes.
Which is in. So that's all you need to
That's
know.
Good to know. There you go. That's quite straightforward, isn't it? It means you can be writing letters now to Italian organisations as well.
I didn't think of that. Again, didn't think of the comedy. Just there thought, well, exactly. I'll learn it for the sake of it.
That's quite
not applicable to life. I wouldn't mind doing a gig in Italian at some point.
Okay, yes.
Doing Eddie Izzard. But
Italy, nice place to go. So if you're going to do it, do the nice place.
I'd like to die on the Riviera, full of pasta and pesto. That's my plan.
So 7 guests a week, time for another. So we mix the comics that you've heard of, maybe comics that you aren't so familiar with, and indeed sometimes non-comics as well. Right now, it's a good pal of mine and comedy circuit stalwart, Matt Green. So Matt Green is here. Hello, Matt Green, fine comedian of many years. We've gigged together a few years ago.
We have. I feel like we started roughly the same kind of time.
When did you start? Yeah.
Sort of 2003, 2004, 2005, those years where I was sort of dabbling a bit. And
yeah, I was sort of 2001, 2002.
Right, okay, so yeah.
So similar era, the good old days.
Really. The days before literally everyone in the world wanted to be a comedian.
Exactly.
I like to think of it.
Yes, far more comedians than there are spots available.
Well, the days when the only ways you could find out who wanted to give gigs out was by ringing numbers in Time Out.
Oh,
and
yeah,
by
yeah.
going on various weird websites that were really out of date, and you'd call somebody and they'd be like, "I haven't run a gig for 10 years."
Yes, it was normally it's that era of the internet was just a big text list of stuff, and you think, "Yeah, this looks like it's sort of the 1980s internet." Yeah. Was there one then? Yeah, it was like that.
And I can't believe it, because I'm not a fan of phone calls. I haven't got phone phobia, but I'm not a fan of phone calls.
I think
really.
I'm similar.
If I have to make a phone call for work purposes, I'll sort of prevaricate and procrastinate for a while before getting around to it, and I'll sort of have to build myself up for it a bit. And I can't believe that when I was a new act, I did used to just phone people all the time. Because email didn't really work in those days. You couldn't really get through to people on email. And Facebook and Twitter and all that stuff didn't really exist. No. So I just, remember making loads of phone calls where and what a bizarre phone call to have to make of, hello, I think I'd like to do comedy, but I've never really done it, or I've not done this before in this way.
Yeah.
I've done 5 gigs.
And you have to introduce yourself on the phone, don't you? Because they've not seen you necessarily.
And the vast majority of those people are just not interested at all. And you just have to... And to be fair, there weren't that many who were actually actively rude, but you did get quite abrupt,
totally.
Not looking at the moment.
Well, it suits like Pete Graham downstairs at the King's Head, Thursdays 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. he's by his phone. That's the known thing, and he tells you that, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And at least that way you can go, okay, he'll pick up fine. But yeah, I remember calling PJ, legend of South London comedy promotion.
Yeah.
I was psyching myself up to phone him because, again, I've got a bit of phone phobia, and I'd heard he could be a bit of a rough diamond.
Yeah.
And I phoned him I thought Tuesday about 2 p.m. I won't be waking him up.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
not
yeah.
the morning. It's
well,
not like 9 a.m.
Mornings normally are a terrible idea.
You know, forget, don't call at 10 a.m. You know, they could be a little late and stuff. So I phoned PJ like 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday, and it rang and rang, and I was just about to give up. And then he picked up and said hello, and I said, "Oh, hello, is that PJ? Yeah, I've been running." Doing some gigs, and I hear you run a club and what. He just said, "I'm in the bath." And then there was
that image was just
oh, thanks for it. And then there was a long pause, and I thought, "Oh, shall I call back?" "No, now's good." And I was like, "Oh no, don't want to have this conversation."
Yeah.
Really,
and it echoed around.
Yeah, exactly. You could hear the splish splash as he got back in again. And, nice. So no, I know what you mean. It was a different age back then.
It was. But the good thing was, there weren't quite so many millions of people trying to do it, which I think was partly that was why, was that it was a bit more of an unknown world, and it was a bit hard to work out who was who and how you got on. And comedy courses existed, but there weren't that many of them. There was only really Logan's one, and maybe the City Lit one. That was kind of it. Whereas there's just hundreds.
And I guess also it wasn't on TV as much, apart from the BBC stand-up show on a Saturday night at midnight or something.
Yeah.
So you weren't seeing Live at the Apollo or Shiny Floor shows and thinking, "Oh yeah, that's a career for me." It wasn't a career; it was something you do because.
Well, it was a thing that you do, and I think that seems to have changed in the last few years. That I definitely remember talking to people at the time and them saying, you know, you've kind of got to do it for 10 years before you know if you're good or not. Or you've got to do it for 10 years to feel like you've worked through, you know, you've found your voice and all that. And I still think that's basically true about a lot of circuit comedy. But the kind of, the process has changed so much now, the industry's changed, that people are, you know, starting and getting on TV within 3 or 4 years. And that's, that, you know, when we started out 10, 15 years ago, that was unheard of. And now it happens quite a lot. You know, you've got to accept that that's just changed.
It seems to be a mix as well of this, of the younger newcomers who come through and have been doing stand-up at university.
Yeah.
Things like that. And then people who, with the whole recession and all that, have been made redundant. They're on gardening leave and from the city, and they're coming and doing lots of jokes about hedge funds and things.
Absolutely.
Because they can afford to.
There's definitely that, and I think that has changed. There is that sort of, try it, because it's now a thing that can make money. People can see that.
Yes.
You know, the biggest ambition you used to have as a comedian was become a headliner on the circuit, and then maybe, if you were very lucky, get a TV show out of that somehow.
Yeah.
You know.
It was a Jungler's Weekend or something, wasn't it? Which
exactly.
Is, of course, no longer the thing.
It's Comedy Store Weekend was like the peak. And it still is a great thing to do, but that was like the pinnacle. Yeah. And now it's like, that's just, a lot of people just zoom straight past that. You know? That's barely noticeable.
Yes.
And they're on off to, you know, bigger and better things. And the difference between, because one of the things I love about comedy, and it's, this is still true, is that you fairly quickly you get to work with some of the people that you knew as a hero, you know, like particularly if you were into comedy as a kid, and particularly if you're into stand-up, you very quickly get to meet those guys, you know. You meet them at a new material night, or you meet them at a charity gig, or even more in Edinburgh, you just sort of see them wandering around. And I think that is slightly changing as well now, because now you have got arena acts, you know, you've got people who literally do play 10,000 seat arenas, and they do still, I've seen Jack Whitehall recently, I've seen Russell Howard not that long ago, you know, they do still pop in and do small gigs, but that's a bit less common than it used to be, I think, that those guys are now on almost like a different plane of existence.
Yeah, they've just discovered the keys to new venues.
Yeah, yeah.
The Heptagon Club.
7 guests, 7 corners, The Heptagon Club, with Paul Parenza.
So it's the last episode for a bit then, as we go away and prep some more. So I'd love to hear your feedback in the meantime. What you want more of on the podcast, what you want less of, the same of. You know, our Christmas specials, for instance, only had a couple of guests and 4 or 5 guests, in inverted commas, that I talked about them. And that was it, really. It was kind of cheating. But that way we can get more pods out to you quicker, because I don't have to track down 7 folks to join us each time. So I'd love to know, what do you think to that? Do let me know. paul@paulcarenza.com, by all means. And thank you to you if you've been with us from episode 1 to this episode 18. That's very good of you. And I do remember back then our regular quick fire questions. Well, here's one that we asked to 3 fine actors who we've had previously guesting a few episodes ago: Cameron Potts, Anna Newcombe, and Nicholson. They've been touring amongst tail last year. So how do they cope with the Heptagon Club question of questions?
So a standard question for guests: which of the 7 wonders of the world would you visit with which of the 7 dwarves, while feeling which of the 7 deadly sins?
Amazing.
Okay,
so
first question.
A little bit of a reminder.
Anyone out there who doesn't
I'm absolutely
for the benefit of the listeners more than myself, too.
You've forgotten and you want to remind yourself of the list.
I'm really fine if you want to create a new wonder. That's not, or a new dwarf, or a new sin. It's really not a problem.
All the wonders?
So you've got the Great Wall of China.
I don't know.
You've got the Pyramids of Giza.
It's not my job to know these things.
You've got the Hanging Gardens of Babylon.
You know.
The Pyramids of Giza.
Are they ancient? They're ancient wonders.
The pyramids is the one most people know, isn't it?
Yes.
Is the Great Wall of China?
Yes, you can see it from out of space. No, you can see it from space, not out of space.
But out of
space. That would be impressive.
Outer space is what people say, I think.
Yes.
Wall of China. Pyramids.
Wall of China, pyramids, Hanging Gardens of Babylon.
What's so good about them?
They're one of the wonders of the ancient world.
There's an ancient and there's a modern, isn't there? There's a lighthouse.
Is the statue of Christ the Redeemer in Rio a modern wonder?
Might be a modern one. Because I'm pretty sure the pyramids are the only ones of the original ones
My
still
mother's
standing.
Baked Alaska. That's,
really?
A modern wonder.
Nice. What about that thing that we keep passing on the motorway? The Stonehenge. Is that one?
I was thinking the Angel of the North myself, but okay.
Yes. Both
Stonehenge.
And it's the A303, not a motorway. I don't want to pick you up on that.
No, absolutely fine.
But do you know what? If we had taken the correct road and followed the sat-nav 2 weeks ago, we would have passed it.
We did
not take the A303, we took the M3 and got
you.
Terribly lost.
Got rid of you. I had a lovely moment with Stonehenge. I was like, it's not, obviously someone got up and put it there. This is ridiculous. Who thought this assembled on its own?
Nearby there's a Woodhenge, do you know that?
A what?
There's a Woodhenge near Stonehenge.
Oh.
There are a couple of henges going on.
No. Obviously, it's the same person.
Clearly.
Same prankster.
It's Jeff Henge. You know, he's just a builder.
I think...
Sorry, go on.
Back
more
to question.
Wonders, yeah.
I can't remember any of the rest of them. But I think I would go to the Great Wall of China with Dopey, who is one of the dwarfs. And I think my deadly sin would be avarice.
Right.
Because so I would then...
That? Fancy words.
He knows them all, doesn't he? He knows the wonders.
I basically, I push Dopey down the Great Wall of China and just watch him bounce and roll. It's like not particularly nice,
it's
is it?
It's pushing little people.
Yeah.
specific.
Which is also...
Basically, we can make up...
It's a very specific
sin. We can make
sin.
Up all of these three things.
Yeah.
Clearly.
It's
yeah,
just
yeah.
like Cluedo. Yeah. It's yes. like dining room with Mrs. White and a screwdriver.
And no one would ever guess that one. You would win. That's it. Yeah.
Indeed. Yeah.
Maybe we'll go on the Time Bridge.
The Time Bridge.
As me and Georgie... With Sting, and Ordek, novel. No, right. Probably. What are the other
well,
dwarfs?
Deck would be the dwarf, wouldn't he?
Ant's probably Doc. I always had quite a sort of affection.
Ant and Doc, yeah.
quite an affection for Doc. Mm. I thought, you know, he's like, oh, what a moron. I'm like, you know what? He's organized. He's running the show here. So I'd probably go Time Bridge with Doc. And what are the sins? Probably just eat loads. Yeah, me and Doc would just.
Lust.
Get really stuffed, gorge yeah. myself with Doc.
More from Cameron and the Annas in a bit on perhaps the worst acting job they've ever had. But first, let's ask Matt Green about his acting CV, which includes a fair chunk of telly. You have done many TV appearances.
I've done a few, yeah.
It's either both extras, I seem to recall, is that mm-hmm. right? I saw you in Finding Neverland, I
yes,
seem to remember.
That was a...
Adverts are plenty as well.
Yeah, I've done. It's funny. I think I have one of those faces because in that people think they see me and more things than I actually.
Okay,
have
so
done.
Maybe I haven't seen you.
I've literally done none. No, yeah. no I, have yeah, done, yeah, yeah. I have done a few, and, yeah. but I do sometimes get people saying, "I've seen you in this and this," and I think, "No, you haven't. I've only done one of those." Or, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that's because if you've been on telly, people sort of assume they've seen you in other things as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, adverts are a funny one because they get shows so often.
Yeah.
And because I don't watch that much TV with adverts in it, because I tend to watch, you know, Netflix and that sort of yeah. thing, so I'm one of those guys, I don't really see that many adverts. So I sort of forget when I'm in an advert that right. there are some people who watch, I think particularly with like football, where there are adverts, you know, every
yes.
every
yeah.
game, and they're at half time and at the end of whatever. And so one of the things I was in, one ad I was in, years ago was apparently used a lot in the football, so just I would get people recognising me from that, and
yeah.
I'd be like, oh god, I forgot, not quite I've forgotten I'd done it, but there was an element of like, oh yeah I am in that, aren't I? But for some people they must have seen that my face 10 times a day.
Is it people not knowing where they've seen you from?
There is an element of that, definitely,
of that as well,
yeah. I think when they see you at a gig, they then assume they've seen you on TV and they assume it's Mock the Week. A number of times,
oh good, that's
me,
good,
oh you've done the Mock the Week, and I used to correct them and say no that isn't
yeah.
it. But now I just accept it.
You could use that, that's good.
It's too sad to kind of go, no, it might be an advert. It's not an advert. And you go, probably is actually, sorry. The other one is Garth Marenghi.
Oh yeah, Dark Place.
I mean, that very briefly, I've got two small cameos in that.
Right.
Because I knew Richard and John a bit. And they sort of would, basically for some of the small parts, they sort of got in there, sort of made some people they sort of vaguely knew.
Yes.
I think basically because they couldn't pay very much and they just needed to you know, get people in. But it was great, you know. I love the Dark Place. I love the Garth Marenghi live shows, which I saw in Edinburgh. So I was, you know, very happy to be involved.
Yeah.
And but again, that was a show that sort of slightly disappeared when it was shown. No, Channel 4 didn't really promote it, but then it's become a cult hit since then.
You got a good range then, from cult hit to adverts abroad. You know,
it's fun.
I did play a tree.
Okay.
So my expensive drama school training.
Yes.
Came in handy because I was being a tree swaying in the breeze.
Nice, nice. Yeah.
Fulfilling every performer stereotype.
I remember at my school, which were not proper actors, of course, they were pupils who were forced to be in productions. And there was a play, I can't remember what the play was called, but it involved a forest. And to give all the children parts, the school, everyone was a tree, basically. But while the proper actors, you know, there's always one or two actors at school.
Yeah.
I mean, you were clearly them, who could act, you know.
You just sing, weren't and, you? I was a late bloomer.
Yeah, really, it's like one of the trees. And, but while the actors were doing their thing, it was quite a long, it's like 20 minutes of these kids having to just stand stock still. And then they started fainting one by one. You could just see like one or two... suddenly just keeling over because they've been they were like little 11, 12-year-olds standing with their arms in the air for too long. Yeah, lactic acid is a killer, isn't it?
It is. Well, it is. It's the majority of it.
Now, we've all played trees on stage. Although if Justin Edwards were to, well, it would be a mighty oak, I'm sure, because he's 6'5". I'm not talking about any wooden acting here. No, Justin, in fact, well, far from it. He can be seen very soon in one of the best plays in London under director Sam Mendes, of all people, and writer Jez Butterworth. It doesn't get any better than that.
You're rehearsing now for the next exciting thing.
The Ferryman.
The Ferryman,
which will start in January.
What a play. So that's been on...
That's been on since about May, wasn't it? Transferred from the Royal Court to the West End in about, I think, I want to say May of last year. And it's being extended till May, so with the third cast.
That's a great play to do, isn't it?
Yeah. It's an extraordinary play, quite remarkable.
A talented bunch of people as well, I think.
Yeah, they're all very good.
Yes, of which you are certainly part of. I don't want to say that you've won a competition or anything, fair play to you. Well done.
It's been good fun. So
yeah, good on you.
5 months of actually having to work.
Yes, indeed, Well, as long as we can always lure you back for Jeremy Lyon for the stage again, that's fine, that's all we need to know. Yeah, brilliant.
If you don't know Jeremy Lyon, well, we talked about this character of Justin's a couple of episodes ago. It's still one of my favourite shows I've ever seen at the Edinburgh Fringe. It's online. Seek out Jeremy Lyon's 12 Drinks of Christmas, which rather inappropriately brings us to our Bring a Bottle segment, where we ask you to bring something to the party, apart from your ears. You've brought those ears and they're lovely, very nice ears. But listen, we're on a big long break after this episode, so your Bring a Bottle suggestion is simply to not forget about us. It sounds sad, doesn't it? I mean, stay subscribed. More will appear in your podcast app soon enough. Subscribe others in our absence. In other words, grab your friend's phone, open the podcast app, search Heptagon Club, click subscribe. Get them listening to this and our back catalogue. And look, if you want to lure us back sooner, you could donate. I'm just saying, via heptagonclub.co.uk, there is a donate button or there's a Patreon button at the top for regular giving if you'd like to. Someone did actually donate last time we were on a break. And it did work. It lured us back sooner. So it does actually work. If you miss us in the next few months, chuck us some cash-a-rooney, and it will make me feel bad for not putting any podcasts out. So I will probably return to the podfield a little earlier were that to happen. And as I roam the land in the next few months seeking guests, I could be interviewing you. So if you think our paths might cross, if you're a comedian perhaps, or a friend of mine, let me know if you fancy being a guest. If our paths won't cross, you can email me a couple of minutes of audio joy, simply you waxing lyrical on something that you know lots about. Educate us, entertain us, evangelise to us about your passions and areas of expertise. In fact, that is what one listener has done, and he's on before the end of the episode today. Listen on, you will hear exactly what I mean. But I welcome your self-submitted, self-recorded, self-invited entrance to the Heptagon Club. A couple of minutes on whatever stirs your soul. Email paul@paulcarenza.com. Brandon Isleeb did, and more of him in a mo after a smidge more from comedian Matt Green.
I found my old list recently of... I used to keep a little log of number of gigs I'd done and little rating out of five and who was on with and that stuff. And I've stopped doing it after about 500 gigs or something, but I found, I think it's like gigs numbered like 297, 298, whatever. And this was 2004, I think it was.
Yeah.
And like five nights in a row, for a start, you could gig five, six times a week in London, which was great.
Yeah.
And five nights in a row, it was like Russell Grand on Monday.
Yeah.
Dara Brian on Tuesday, and Paul Foot on the bill as well or something, and then the next night was Alan Carr. Mm. The next night, Omar Jalili was the next night. So all in that 1 week, and that was a normal week.
Yeah,
that
and wasn't they were just regular acts unusual. At the time. They were circuit acts, weren't they? You know, they were beginning to dabble in a bit of TV maybe, but it was basically that.
One or two of them might be doing a theatre tour or something, but there was certainly no arena.
No, it's funny, isn't it? Because it feels like that time it was sort of the golden age where there was a whole reservoir of talent of people who had been working on the circuit for a long time and had got really good, but without any outlet for it, really, without because they weren't wanting to make a sitcom or they weren't wanting to make their own show in some way.
When stand-up was on TV before, it was there was like the BBC stand-up show, and Jack D had those. It was really paving the way with his Channel 4 show that he had. And the first series of Live at the Apollo was just Jack D.
Mm.
And a guest
Live at the Apollo.
I think it was actually, yeah.
Something like that. And then, he was part of the title at least.
Yeah, and he was doing at least half. I think the episode one was just him, I think. And then episode two onwards he had guests, but he was still doing a good half hour himself.
It was very much him presenting it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like what Michael McIntyre's Comedy Roadshow.
Yes, exactly.
Later.
Yeah.
You know, it was like that for the first.
Because I remember thinking, wow, this guy this year has turned over probably 2 to 3 hours worth of hollow quality material.
Yeah.
And then, of course, and I was thinking, oh, what are they going to do for series two? And then, of course, series two goes, I'm just going to do one, and then everyone else can take it. And then from there on.
Yeah.
So, in a way, that was the weird sort of bridge between the old kind of 90s TV stand up of Jack D going through a cellar.
Yeah.
And then the shiny floor.
And it's funny how
we now have.
I think also now, because there's so much more comedy on the telly and it's everywhere now, that I think it's much harder to make that impact. That, you know, I remember seeing Frank Skinner on Have I Got News For You in the early 90s sometime, and that was his first big TV appearance anyway. But yeah, he did one big show on telly, and that was all he needed, you know, and then that catapulted him into the mainstream.
Yes,
you know,
that's,
Whereas now I feel like you'd have to do 10 appearances on those sorts of shows before he's like going, oh, who's that guy?
Yes,
of course. Recognize him.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened. That's why comics now can feel to us, to other comedians, like they get sort of overexposed because you just keep seeing them. But you think, well, that's because we know who they are.
But
so
they have
keep
to be
noticing them. But actually, the general audience is going, oh, it's just another comedian, you know, there are so many of us.
And it's bizarre when you go out there, particularly into the provinces, and you hear audience members speaking about comedians, and they still actually only know about 5 or 6 comedians. They don't know a Catherine Ryan or something like that, which is big to us.
Yeah. They don't recognise her, but it would
was on that thing of the whatever. Yeah. But they don't know these people generally.
If you say to a random person in the public, you know, someone in the street, name 5 comedians. I'd be surprised if more than 2 of them were people that would consider sort of alternative comics. You know, you'd get your Billy Connollys, you'd get Victoria Wood, probably, or who, maybe even people like Rowan Atkinson, or, you know, John Cleese. You might get a Russell Howard or a Michael McIntyre or a Peter Kay, but even then, probably not as often as you'd expect, you know.
Yeah.
And that's just amazing, you know, that comedy still has a slightly underground.
Yeah, it does actually, surprisingly so.
So let's delve into this a little further. Why is it then that Joe Public only knows a certain number of comedians, regardless of others being just as good? Well, someone has unpicked this in book form. Not so much about comedian success, but sports players and particularly baseball. Brandon Isleeb is a Seattle-based writer and baseball fan, and he's written about this exact thing, how popularity and media affects a performer's reputation as well as their own talents. So Brandon has really done exactly what we're asking about in this week's Bring a Bottle. He has sent us in his contribution. We've had this once or twice before, but it's rare. So we are delighted to open the Heptagon Club doors for a podcast listener, baseball expert Brandon Isleeb.
When I wrote my book, Playing for a Winner, How Baseball Team Success Raises Players' Reputations, one of the key things I was trying to get at was, why is it that 2 equally good performers in something can have widely different popularity? And the key thing that I came up with is an equation for you, for me, for anyone's life, that reputation equals productivity times spotlight. You have to do something and someone has to notice you doing it. And with that, I put all kind of sporting endeavors on a spectrum from Disney films to the show Lost, where Disney films have a few characters, a really easy to follow premise. So it's very easy for people who don't even care about films or plots or narrative to jump in, have a good time, jump out. Lost has a much higher barrier to entry, but because it's more intricate, it's also more rewarding for the people who really invest in it. So it has a really invested following, even as the show has been done for years. And you can put any sporting endeavor on the same spectrum. When Tiger Woods was dominating in golf, I didn't know any other names in golf, but I could name at least one golfer, and that made me think, oh, I know a little bit of something about golf. No, I just happen to know a really popular athlete named Tiger Woods, and I know what sport he plays. Golf is more interesting, as is any sport, when there are a variety of winners, when more teams have a chance of doing something. But their taking turns in the spotlight makes it harder for the non-fan to follow. So it's sort of an inverse relationship, like with Disney and Lost, between intricacy and ease of getting into, ease of knowing it. I quantified that for baseball because I know baseball well, but you could do that for anything else if you want. You could do it for Hollywood films, music sales, anything like that. When you're frustrated that people go, oh, I love TV, and then they can't name anything that you like, well, maybe that's part of it. they're sort of just following what the news has for them. They're aware of some celebrities. They could name the top five answers on Pointless, but not any Pointless answers. That's kind of what's going on, and it's been fascinating to try to track it down and quantify it.
Playing for a Winner by Brandon Isleeb is going to be on our Amazon guests list, where we collate any book written by a Heptagon Club guest. They are all there. Brandon's baseball book, Joe Lycett's book of letters, my Christmas book, and in fact, I've got two children's books out next month. They are on there too. Noah's Car Park Ark and Moses and the Exodus Express. If you go to our Heptagon Club Facebook page, you'll see a link there for the Amazon guests list. So go and buy some books. So this is it. We're off now for a long holiday. Stay subscribed. Find me on Facebook. Paul Carenza is my page. At Paul Carenza on Twitter. I will keep you abreast of all I'm up to, which in the next few months will be gigs and writing. Not Going Out returns to BBC One very soon. I've got some words in that. I've got the new kids' books. They're out in February. I'm doing a mini tour that's like a bluffer's guide to the Bible, mostly via pop songs. I'm doing the new Christmas play, premiering in Guildford in July. I'm on the radio aplenty, hoping for more with BBC Sussex and BBC Surrey. Definitely on Radio 2, Pausing for Thought. Lots of that coming up. If you're listening, in fact, right now, and as I'm recording this, then January 25th, February 2nd, February 9th and February 24th are the next Radio 2 breakfast show slots, about 9:20 in the morning. In the meantime, for your listening pleasure, there's my old podcast, Movie Banter, if you really fancy. That's still on iTunes. There's 100-odd episodes of that. That'll keep you busy. There might also be a new pod project soon that I'm doing with James Carey, something biblical and funny. That is the plan. But more info on that as it comes in on Twitter and Facebook. Do give us a rating or a review on iTunes in the meantime. That would be really, really nice of you. Thank you to my guests. Thank you to Rob Halligan for the music, Sam Gold for the logo design, and you for listening. We're probably back in a few months. Hey, you, has anybody said to you? And yes, if you donate on heptagonclub.co.uk or Patreon on the same page, that will, I'm sure, lure us back sooner. So if you miss us, you know what to do. But failing all else, happy January, happy Valentine's, happy Easter, happy 2018. See you after a while. And as Tiny Tim observed, sorry, he was very childish.